Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. I'm your host, John Connors. I'm also the founder of Connors Martial Arts in Norwood, Massachusetts. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, and MMA. And this is Power of the Tribe, and I'm here with my co-host, Dan Robin. How you doing, Dan?
Good. How you doing, John?
You must have traveled this time.
I took to the hills again.
You took to the hills.
Yeah, I go hiking in the mountains sometimes. You know that, right?
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, I went up to the Catskills and did some bushwhacking, which means hiking without a trail.
That's what that means.
Yeah.
I never knew what that meant.
Yeah.
Did you have a boomerang? It sounds very Australian, bushwhacking, right?
No, but I walked like the bushwhackers the whole time, like that old wrestling tag team.
They pumped their arms or something? That makes sense. So you're literally whacking into bushes. That's why they call it bushwhacking.
I didn't actually think of that. Yeah.
Well,
maybe
you know,
whack at the bushes to get past them.
To get through them.
Yeah. I don't know.
I love etymology.
Yeah.
So bushwhacking, that's very good. Yeah.
Yeah, so we just did a couple mountains.
You and the family?
No, with my son. Yeah, so it was all good. I just bumps and bruises and scrapes. You do.
Very cool. Do you ever rock climb?
And you know what? I don't.
I just saw that movie, Free Solo. You should see it.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it. Yeah, I don't like. There's two things I don't like about rock climbing. One is it's sort of like slow, right? You're in one spot for hours and hours. And two is the dying.
The dying.
I don't want that either.
That goes in the negative column.
I mean, I guess you could die like hiking or bushwhacking or whatever, but I'm not really going to, you know, it's sort of.
That bush would have to whack you pretty hard.
Well, you can fall or get a rattlesnake or a bear could kill you or, you know, something.
Right.
Or if you're by yourself,
you could get disoriented.
Yeah, I thought about that when I'm by myself. If you fall and break a leg, like crawling 8 miles to my car is not going to be fun, you know.
No.
Or in the winters, you can die from exposure. But these are, it's not going to happen. But rock climbing seems like it might happen.
It might, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm out. The hobbies where you die, I think.
You're just taking those off the table.
Yeah.
Speaking of hobbies where you could die, this is a perfect segue for our guest. That's awesome. He's sitting here listening to us babble on like we do.
We've never forgotten a guest, though.
We've never forgotten a guest.
That's all right. Yeah. It's interesting. I didn't know bushwhacking either, so it made sense right away.
So I have to introduce you. So he's a jiu-jitsu student that trains with us, and he also is a long-distance swimmer.
Yeah.
Craig Lewin. Congratulations. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Man. Happy to be here.
And I said you could die doing what you do because he doesn't just swim across the pool, Dan.
I didn't realize. Long distance.
Yes. Long,
very long distance. You just did a pretty significant swim.
Yeah.
What was it?
I did Catalina Channel. It's a 20.3-mile swim from Catalina Island in California to mainland.
It's the point three that really gets you. Yeah.
Because you can see land, but the current's pushing back on you. It's like, you're not coming here. So now
if I done like 10, 11 laps.
Okay.
That's less, right?
It's a lot less.
Okay.
It's a good effort.
How many lengths are a mile?
66 lengths, roughly.
66 lengths. Yeah. So you only have to do like 1,300 lengths. Dan.
Yeah,
that's you'll a little get more. Close to
yeah.
than I've done in combined.
20.3 miles. When did he exactly do it?
So I did it July 19th. We started at 11 p.m. Jump in. At 11 p.m. you start, you swim through the night, and then the next day you hopefully finish.
So I have a question. First of all, how many people go with you?
So you have one boat per person. So it's not a race. It's a channel crossing. So if you do the English Channel, you book a day, that's your day, and you go, and it's just you and your crew. So the same thing, it was me and my crew.
So it's just you and your crew.
Right.
There's no other crews.
There was, I think, one other swimmer that went out that day, but he went out at a different time, so we could kind of see each other's boats, but that was the extent of it. We were like probably miles away. Mm. It was just no one else was out at, you know, 2 in the morning.
And why do you start at 11? Is it just...
Catalina is a really busy boating. Like, it's a channel, obviously, where there's boat traffic, but then you have all the recreational like sailboats and whatnot. So it's really hard to navigate through all that. They'll put you in a holding pattern where you'll just sit and tread water, and you don't want that when you're tired and cold. You want to just get to the other side and get out.
So how long does that take?
Depends on... A lot of, you know, there's a lot. It's currents, winds, conditions in general.
Sharks.
Yeah. You see when you might go faster. it took me 11 hours. I think, you know, the average, most people are between 9 hours and like 17 hours.
And how long are you swimming? What percentage of the time versus resting?
So basically every half hour I'd stop for a quick feed, which would be about 30 seconds to a minute. So basically swimming 10 hours and 55 minutes.
And when you say feed,
it's just like
someone from the boat. Yes, it's not like you don't grab a fish.
No.
grab a squid.
That's not why I do it. I don't know. Plankton or something. Well, like it was a fish, yeah. Seaweed. No, it's they throw you a bottle.
Okay. He's feeding.
Yeah. Call it a feed. And it's, yeah, it's interesting. All right. It's not very exciting. It's like a bottle of, you know, whatever you've trained with, but. A lot of people do weird things. Like I'm pretty boring when it comes to what I want to eat. I just like something that tastes like nothing. That way I never get really sick of the flavor because there is no flavor. But I've heard of people doing jelly munchkins. So just pop in like three or four munchkins at a time. And I don't get that because you're...
That doesn't seem like that's the optimal food, right? They're like getting, there's got to be something.
Your hands are going to get sticky too.
Well, yeah, obviously. That would drive me nuts. No, but you know, it gets wet with seawater. So then you're eating like jelly donuts that are covered in...
Salt.
Yeah.
Seawater.
Yeah.
That can't be good.
I wouldn't want it.
So have you had jellyfish issues?
Yeah. On this, I've had them just in training, but even during that swim, it was actually like a welcome. I enjoyed it because I think around like 2 or 3 in the morning, I was just tired, but not from swimming. I was just like tired because I'm usually in bed at that time. And I was like falling asleep and I was getting cold because I was tired and the water wasn't that cold to me. I trained it much worse. So I was like, mentally, I'm like, dude, you're fine. Get your crap together. Like, what is happening right now? And I got stung by 3 or 4 jellyfish and like it woke me right up and kind of snapped me back into.
Now, how painful is that?
So it wasn't like box jellyfish. It was just standard. I don't know what the species was. It feels sting. Like it's like a burning. Mm. So it like burns for like 20 minutes and then goes away.
That is good, though.
Yeah, it's not bad. It just kind of wakes you up. Yeah. If you get stung by, like, a box or a man of war, that's a different
then
story.
Then you have to leave, get out of the water. Right?
Oh, yeah. You don't have to get out. You're getting out.
You're getting hauled out.
Yeah.
So could you have people on the boat bring a bucket of jellyfish next time and, like, huck them at you
if you're
falling asleep?
Yeah, I'm sure that could be arranged.
Is that legal? What are they allowed to do for the boat? They're allowed to feed you.
They're allowed to feed you. And that's about it. Certain swims will allow you to bring support swimmers with you. So someone, obviously not someone you can grab onto who supports you, but you're out there by yourself for a long time.
That's what I would do, Dan. Yeah. I would just hug the person, the support swimmer.
You know?
Put a body lock on them, you know? Put a
support swimmer. Swim you half away.
Yeah, so you can bring them with you. And the certain channels have certain rules. And in this one, it was I have to swim for an hour by myself. And then one of them could get in for an hour. And you alternate. And they can do a max of like... I think 3 hours per person total.
What do? They just
swim next to you. Oh, it's just like company.
Right.
They can't pace you, so they have to stay far away from you.
They can't pace you.
Right.
Oh, and they have to stay far away from you.
So, like, they have to be, like...
What's far?
Like 10 feet. You just don't want to hit them. It's not like hundreds of yards.
Right.
But, they don't want, like, a wave to come and
But they can't lead you. They have to, like, let you lead.
They can't lead you because what happens is you'll start drafting, so then it makes the effort...
Less.
Quote unquote easier. It's never easier.
How much does it help to have someone jump in the water 10 feet away from you? You could talk to the people on the boat anyway. Right?
It does help. It's like a change of pace almost. Like, because when you have someone, even though they're not pacing you, when you see someone swimming next to you and they're having like an easy time, it kind of gets you going. It's like, oh, I just got to keep up with him. Like, I know every other hour I'm going to be swimming faster than I am when I'm by myself, just because your focus is on something else other than, man, this really sucks. Why did I sign up for this?
Now, let me back up for a minute. Do you know how many people have actually made this swim successfully? Do they record that?
So they record how many people finish.
Okay. How many finished? Do you know?
So in the history of the swim, so history of the world, I was number 470. I think there was just under 500 completed it, like total this year. Not 500 this year, 500 ever. So I think 60 people did it this year and completed it. But I don't know how many started and didn't
finish. You were 470, and then you think another 30 might have rolled
in. Yeah, I think around there.
Who was the first maniac to do this?
You know, I don't know who the first one was.
You know what year it was?
I can look it up. I don't know that either.
Did you know that bushwhacking means
I didn't know that.
Trail?
I did not know that either.
See, I would never undertake this unless I thoroughly understood the etymology of it and the whole history of it.
You know,
I would not undertake it under any circumstances.
Yeah, I know more about the English Channel than this one.
if 500 have done, 60 have done this year, then probably something where 30 did it last year, maybe 20 the year before. So probably about 20 years this has been going about.
It's been going on a lot longer. So really? Like, yeah, like the English Channel, I want to say like the first guy was like 1905 or something like that.
You know what? I have a book about the first guy to do the English Channel, and I think it might have been in the 1800s. It might have been. Maybe 1905. He had a strange stroke. He didn't do the Australian
crawl. He did breaststroke.
So it took him a long time.
21 hours.
Yeah.
I read the same book, I think.
Yeah. But he was super buoyant guy. So it's like not a lot of effort, I would say, for stroke. But
I don't know. When you're in that water, that water's cold. And it's mean. It's not
that's
nice.
That's a good question about buoyancy. Like, so you don't just get super fit, right? Like you want a certain fat content.
Yeah.
Too, right?
Yeah. If you look at a lot of like open water, like marathon swimmers who do cold water, very rarely do you see like a ripped person. They're right. strong and they're fit, but you might see them in the grocery store and be like, man, that person's overweight. Like they should probably not eat that.
Now, what about, I know the sprinting swimmers, it's to be tall is an advantage.
Yeah.
You're not particularly tall. What about the long distance guys? Are they shorter or they're all over the map?
I think it's all over the map for the most part. It's more mental. I mean, it's not a physical, it's in your head. Cause after a certain point, you're just moving your arms and you just got to keep yourself going and keep yourself from like not succumbing to how horrible it is.
Could you walk us through how you got into this?
Yeah, sure. So I swam in high school. I started swimming in high school, like competitively. And then I swam at Boston College. They have a D1 program. So I swam there for the 4
years.
Were
these sort of long distance swims?
Yeah. Or? Well, so no, this was just like pool swimming. So this is like sprint where it helps to be tall. And when I was in high school, it'd be funny because I'd be in one of the faster heats. And it'd be like 7 foot tall, 7 foot tall, then me at 5'5", and then 7 foot tall, 7 foot tall. And
but you were quick. You were effective.
Yeah, I could hold my own.
You weren't doing like the longer of the pool swims even.
I did the mile 500, but I mean, the mile, when you look at what I do now, it's... Yeah. It's quite short. But yeah, so I started with that. And then I read a woman's, her name's Lynn Cox. She's her book's called Swimming to Antarctica. She's like the first woman to swim, I think, a mile or 1,500 meters in Antarctica. She's known for cold water swimming. And I read it and I like got hooked instantly. I'm like, I want to do that. I want to do cold water swimming. I want to do all that. And
when was this?
I think I read the book my senior year of high school. Yeah. And then I had collegiate swimming and I got into triathlon for a little bit, which was kind of the entry point into open water.
Yeah.
But that was like, you know, half mile swims, mile swim, nothing crazy. About my sophomore year of college, I was like, I want to do something big. I want to do something cool. So I did my first 25K, which is about a 15 and a half mile open water swim. So I did that.
Wow.
And I did not train right at all. I just kind of went off of, well, I've been swimming a lot because I swim in college, so I should be fine. But it was pretty miserable. Like looking back on it, the way I trained then and the way I trained for like Catalina were vastly different. I mean, I was going and I'd be like, I'm going to swim 28,000 yards today. Whereas now it's like, okay, once every 4 weeks, I'm going to do, you know, a 4 hour swim or back to back 4 hour swims, like 4 hour Monday, 4 hour Tuesday, or, you know, or at most a 7 hour swim. I would never try to go over the distance I was racing or going for. And
now, is the Catalina race your greatest achievement in this sport for yourself?
I think I'm the most proud of it. It was the first time I finished pretty much anything where I was like, man, like I'm really excited and like proud of what I did, because it wasn't just, you know, it's a whole process. You have to find the date you want. You have to book a boat. You have to go through the application process to get approved to do the swim. So you need to get a permit to do it. And then you got to do all the training. So
now, how long was it between the moment you decided to do this and then the actual accomplishing of swimming
it? It was about 9 months.
9 months.
Yeah. And before this, I kind of wasn't swimming a ton before. So it was kind of like it wasn't starting from scratch. For when you're a swimmer, it's never starting from scratch because you know how to swim and it comes back really fast. But I had to ramp up the distance. So it was a very busy 9 months where I felt like I was playing catch up for a lot of it. I had a huge support crew, like my family and friends and people I coach in swimming. They're all like interested in asking me about it. But at the end of the day, I'm the one going to the pool by myself and I'm in the water at 4 a.m. and I'm not leaving till noon some days. So I'm in there for 8 hours and talk to nobody.
Now, did you plot out your whole 9 months of preparation? Yeah. You knew exactly pretty much what you had to do week to week.
Yeah, for the most part, I had a goal mileage. Every 4 weeks is a training block was 4 weeks. So I'd have a speed week and then a building week and then a bulk week, which was like the most volume. And then the fourth week was a recovery week. But, you know, when you're doing volume that high, at some point you're going to get sick or you're going to get hurt. So you still have to be somewhat flexible where, you know, oh, crap, I didn't hit, you know, the 80 miles I was supposed to swim last week. What am I going to do? So you do have to be a little flexible and give yourself a little bit of leeway. Don't go crazy. Like if you miss a swim, just right. Don't make it a habit. As soon as you miss two or three or four, then you're like, okay, I'm on a slippery slope. I got to get things back together. But I think for me, remembering why I was doing it, remembering how difficult the goal was, I never fell into that type of slope. I had the opposite where I felt like I lacked the confidence that I overtrained and overprepared. Mm. So I was like, oh, if I do more, I'll be fine. But I think in the end, that ended up also hindering me somewhat. So,
you have a lot of pressure because, like you said, all your friends and family are expecting you to do this now. Like you're telling everyone you're going to do it and everyone's making arrangements.
Right.
And then you're hiring a boat and everything. It's like, oof.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It will motivate you when you sink like, you know, $7,000 or $8,000 into, you know, a 10 or 11 hour swim. It's a lot.
But do you have, like we've talked to, usually who we have in here is people that have competed in mm-hmm. MMA. And there's sort of this common thread of at some point leading up to a fight, the fighter thinking like, why'd I even do this? Or even jujitsu competition. You said you even have had it for the jujitsu competition.
Like that moment, Craig, when you're like three quarters through the training and it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's a slog and you start going, what the hell am I even doing this for? Did you ever have that notion? Even fleetingly?
Or while you're doing it?
I didn't have it in training. It wasn't on necessarily doing it. It was, what am I going to feel like when I get to the beach at the end of it? That was the feeling I was going for. And nothing to that point in my life, you know, in my life, like athletically, has given me the feeling I'm looking for. So I kept hoping this was going to be that and lead me on a new path.
That as motivation in your training.
Right. But when I got to the swim itself, around 6 hours in, I started having a lot of shoulder problems. I was cold. I was tired. And at that point, I was like, I'm not sure I'm going to make it. And I really just want to get out. But, you know, so during the event, I was like, I don't know why the heck I'm doing this. This is stupid.
Is the cold the hardest thing?
Yeah, for me, it is. Yeah. I don't do great in the cold. That was my biggest fear. So I actually gained like 25 pounds for like insulation purposes. It was fun doing it, but now I'm in the phase where it's like I got to take it all off, and it's less fun now. Yeah. But cold for me is a big fear because I can't really control it to the degree I'd like to. I grew up in Swampscott, so I grew up right on the water. My parents' house is a half mile from the beach, so if I were living there, I could just walk to the beach every day and swim in the ocean every day. And when it's 50 degrees or 55 degrees, it's a lot of time you have to acclimate to that cold water. And I didn't really have that. So for me, I had to kind of do the next best thing. And I know John's big into Wim Hof. So I started looking into him. I read a few of his books. And then I got a trash can for my garage, filled it with water, filled it with ice. And then every day in the winter, I'm just like, I'm just going to try to make it a little bit longer. And I'm like, if I can handle water that's 44, I can handle water that's 58 or 60.
What were your intervals in the trash can?
So the most I made it. I think it was 47 minutes.
Wow. And
it was like 54 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a tiny, I should have got a bigger trash can because I was like sitting in there all cramped up. I'm like, oh, this is awful. I feel like Oscar the Grouch.
What is your wife thinking? Yeah. Craig's in the trash can.
Yeah. A neighbor stops by.
Well, that was like, be
can
funny.
I talk to Craig? Like he's sitting in a trash can. Right now.
So what would be funny.
Hey, how long has he been in? About 45 minutes.
Almost an hour. Okay. He should be out soon.
You know, I would sit and I'd be in the trash can, like up to my neck. And then, but it was right, my head was right in the window of my garage. So like, there was like a bunch of panel windows and the mailman would walk by. I'm like, look at him, like, dude, you knock on it. He's like, you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Don't worry. By like, you know, February, he's just whatever. No big deal.
Yeah. You should have it in the front yard next time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, maybe open the garage, let people watch the show. But yeah, so that allowed me to at least kind of take control over the cold as much as I could, where I was like, okay, I'm not confident in this. What can I do to become more confident? And like when I can sit there motionless, which is arguably significantly harder than swimming, because when I'm swimming, I'm at least generating some form of heat. So I'm sitting there just shivering.
Do you think that helped you in the swim itself?
Mentally, yeah.
Mentally.
I think it did.
Gave you a little confidence.
Yeah. Going into it, I'm like, okay, I can handle, you know, 44 degree water. I can handle 54 degree water. I can handle 62 degree
now,
water.
Did you do any of the Wim Hof techniques in order to deal with the just being in that ice water?
I did, yeah. I did some of the breathing.
He's got some kind of burning brown fat thing. Dan, have you heard of brown fat?
No.
I think it's all BS. But yeah. You somehow breathe a certain way. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Did you get his course? And it's like,
so yeah,
it's
I looked
like
it up.
I don't know where it is in your back. I don't know, something.
I did the breathing thing. I think I got up to like 4 minutes of holding my breath, but it right. didn't really help me stay warm. It just allowed me to focus on something that wasn't me being cold. So,
oh, I see.
So that helped yeah. me. Yeah, the brown fat, it's supposedly, it's regular fat, but it's brown because it has mitochondria in it. So in theory, it generates heat and burns more calories. So that's why it's brown fat instead of regular fat. Yeah. But
is it sort of medically proven, or is it kind of Wim Hof?
It's, I don't know about gaining more, but brown fat is a thing.
Okay.
But he has some sort of technique. I can't remember what it is now, but a certain way you hold the breath, not the method,
right.
the regular breathing method, another special method that actually prompts your body to burn that brown fat supposedly and heat yourself up. I don't remember exactly what it is right now, but you know, I do the cold shower thing occasionally. A lot of it is just mental. If I'm taking one of these ice cold showers, I imagine that the water hitting me is actually warm. And if I can use my imagination enough, it seems to work.
Yeah.
And you don't feel as cold. Yeah.
You get used to it. I mean, if you're doing it every day, it's never like after the first day.
So you could just turn on pure cold shower every morning and it wouldn't bother you.
Yeah. That would be fine.
For you, it's constant. It's kind of mood related, right? Like sometimes you just feel rugged and you can go out in the cold.
Oh, yeah.
And other times I'm just feeling like real wimpy, you know, like you're like, I can't like.
I have a theory. Like, I think you might be, your immune system might be compromised at that moment when you're feeling like that. I just can't do it. So you probably are better off just warming yourself up at that point.
Yeah.
Maybe taking a break that day. Like Craig was saying, it's like you have a plan, but you have to be flexible and to know that, gee, I'm not up for it today. I got to take it easy and come back harder next time.
With the cold stuff, I never did that. However I felt, I'm like, this is where I'm bad. And if I don't make a swim, that's not weather related. Like, and that's, you know, it's the hard thing is, you know, we talked about the ego trap a few last week. And, you know, I can go into a swim and other marathon swimmers know, like, if you get pulled, there's a lot of reasons why you could get pulled from the swim. But to someone who's not inside the community, they look at that as a failure. Whereas other people in the swim, like, oh, it was probably, you know, it was like 15-foot seas. Like, the boat was going to capsize. They had to get him in. Or there's a lot of different circumstances where
storms must, or
yeah, it was anything.
Lightning storms.
Yep, lightning, they pull you out, you know. So there's all these different scenarios where you get pulled, and people in the community, it's like, it's not a failure. But to people that I would coach or who know me who are like not swimmers, they're like, oh, you didn't make it. So you failed.
Of people in the community, is there an actual issue of sharks, or is that just a joke for...
I think if you're a real water swimmer, you don't, you know, you educate yourself. There's certain times of day when you should swim. There's certain places you should swim. Like, you know, you don't swim at dawn or dusk, and you don't swim where you see seals or sharks are known to feed. If you stay away from those places, it's highly unlikely that you're going to get attacked by a shark. Like, they're not looking for people to enter the water to eat them. They're just looking for a meal. And
they're not looking for those long distance swimmers with that delicious brown fat.
I don't know. I feel like we could be stringy.
You know? I don't know, like out in the middle of the ocean. I just don't know how it doesn't occur to you that there's like a mile of water under you. And
that could be with Catalina specifically. And I've been a support swimmer for the English Channel. The water, when you look down, it's just pure blackness. So like you wouldn't know something's happening until it already happened. And at which point you're not scared.
No, you are scared.
No, you're not. You're not scared because there's no time to be scared.
It's just a lovely abyss.
Yeah.
It's just an abyss underneath you. Anything could be approaching.
It's a nice feeling to feel like you mean nothing. Like you're nothing. You're this tiny little blip that it's insignificant because this ocean is so massive and huge.
You're just playing the odds. You're like, there are things in here that'll kill me.
Oh, yeah.
But totally. What are the odds that I run into one small?
Yeah, highly unlikely.
Yeah. Oh, you're saying, I thought you were being sort of... philosophical.
No, like, I am.
But I'm just this insignificant thing in this grand scheme, and it's.
But you are. Yeah.
But you're actually less likely to get eaten too. Yeah. That's like the other way to look at it.
You know, they don't feed in the middle of the ocean. They feed on shore because that's where all the animals they eat are. So the only time you got to be worried is when you start and when you finish. But I wasn't starting at dawn or dusk, and I wasn't finishing at dawn or dusk, so I didn't.
I actually
have to worry.
Yeah, I had that. Like, did I tell you about my Wellfleet? Like, so we rented a place on Wellfleet.
Where you almost got mugged.
Fought
off muggers.
No. Every summer, we rented a house on Wellfleet for a week. And I would get up in my only ocean swimming, which has nothing to do with yours. You know, there's no comparable except it's both the ocean.
You're in there.
I went into the Wellfleet Bay, and I'd be the only one in the bay. And because I get up in the morning and just go out and I swim. And it's not that big a bay. You can kayak from side to side of it. So I did this for, we went for a few years. And then someone forwarded me an article and it said, Wellfleet Bay is brimming, was the word, with great white sharks. Brimming with great white sharks. I'd seen seals when I'm out there. And I was
You were basically doing everything incorrectly. Yeah.
I was nervous about the seals. I was that seal could kill me. So I didn't go back. But you're saying that was exactly the wrong place to be, right?
Yeah, like totally.
Like near, because I didn't go out that far because I'm not, you know, I'm not bad. So it was near the shore.
Morning.
With seals.
With seals.
Lucky. Should have played the lottery that day.
But no one.
And you had just eaten bacon and you had bacon grease all over your hands. Yeah.
Yeah. I was strapped with steak. No.
Yeah.
But so you're saying someone that swims miles and miles in the ocean, you're saying you wouldn't do that.
Not knowingly. Yeah. No. If I knew there was a shark attack in an area and I knew why,
knowing what Dan just said, you're not going to go to Wellfleet.
I probably wouldn't.
In the bay.
I probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know. So I think month ago, I had a swimmer who qualified for Ironman World Championships in Kona, and she was nervous about the open water swim. So I took her and another friend who I coach. We did an open water swim, and I had heard rumors about great whites in the area, but this is where I grew up. I know there's no seals. I'm like, we get them. We get rogue. They get lost. Not a big deal. I didn't tell them because I don't want to freak them out, and I wasn't worried. And we get to the beach, and this is
where is this now?
This is in Marblehead.
Okay.
So this wasn't dawn or dusk. It was like it was like a midday time. It was fine, and we see this like massive fish head, not like a tiny fish head. Like the fish head alone was like 3 feet. So and it was just a head. There was no body, no bones. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, crap. Like, there's definitely, that was eaten by probably one of the great whites.
That rolled up on the shore while you guys were standing there?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like.
And how big was it?
It was like probably, the head alone was probably like 3 feet. It was huge.
Like, what's the size of whatever killed it?
Yeah. So that's what I was like. So I was like, oh, I know there's a great white because there's like a great white, all the tagged ones, you can see where they are. And I knew there was one, like, literally in the area within a mile of where we were swimming. And I'm like, I think it's fine. So we went, we swam. I told them after. They were fine. They laughed it off.
But off Cape Cod, off the Cape has become an issue.
That's right? An issue, yeah.
My daughter had a friend that was just playing on the beach. You know, there's like that family scene on the beach. And
like the south shore of the Cape? Like
toward the open. Yeah. Like a seal got like brutally murdered. It scarred like all the kids like because... Wow. The whole ocean, there's actually some video, like the water got filled with blood, and then the seal puts its head up and like starts shrieking.
Oh,
you
know,
if you've ever heard an animal, like, yes. And all these little kids are like playing on the beach, and there's like a seal basically like, help, like, you know, like shrieking and getting gradually eaten as the ocean fills with blood. Obviously, all the people get out, but they're all still.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to get your kid back in after that, or back in after that.
Yeah,
just feel like I'm not going back in.
Yeah, that would be scarring for sure.
It's an issue.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow.
Issue's a strong word.
Yeah.
They're there. Like they're around.
But
like the Cape. Yeah.
Just jump right in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear this too, where people say, "Well, the sharks don't like to eat people. You know, they look for seals.
They also don't know until they've taken a piece."
That's the thing. I also feel too. I'm like, I don't like McDonald's. But sometimes I eat it.
Hungry enough.
You know what I mean? Hungry enough, and I'll eat it.
Yeah.
So I figure same goes for the sharks. Like, I'm not sold on that.
If he tastes you and spits you out, that's probably not a great experience.
Yeah, either. Oh, sorry. Yeah. The shark's not going to, oh, wait, I thought you were a seal. Like, at that point, it's a little
wasted
late.
You. Yeah. That stinks.
Yeah.
I'm not good enough for you? Come on.
So for me, I think most people that aren't in the bit, that don't do this in your community, just the idea of like being in the middle of the ocean and jumping in is kind of spooky, isn't it?
I can barely swim at all. Craig was my coach a little bit last year, I think.
Worked a little.
Yeah. I'm coming back next year, Dan.
He's a lot of muscle. Muscle sinks.
Yeah. My head is extra bone density in
so you're
my
not,
skull.
You're not buoyant?
I am not anti-buoyant.
From the bottom?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like actually, you actually just sink. Like if you
pretty
just,
much.
Yeah.
You just sink to the bottom?
Yeah. Yep.
Like a rock. It was not even slow. Like for most people, it's like a slow sink. It was straight down. Right. Yeah.
But we'll overcome.
Yeah.
Craig is a very patient and skilled coach.
You,
so
you
I have confidence. Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
So can I ask a question about when you started? Because now just mindset I'm thinking of where you know, you saw this documentary of a woman swimming in Antarctica and your first thought was, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I think most people's first thought is, I don't want to do that.
Possibly.
You know, like, so why do you have any insight? Maybe you don't, but any insight into why that resonated with you? You know, like, why? Maybe you were just good at swimming or
no. I mean, so that's
like to challenge yourself.
That's part of it, these things. But, you know, the good at swimming is what, you know, a lot of people are way better swimmers than me and I don't claim to be phenomenal. It's, I pride myself on like just mental toughness and not quitting ever, regardless of like the situation. And so for me, when I saw it, I was like, I really want to do it. Cause it, for me, it was like, it's, there's not many places that you can pioneer anymore. Like a lot has been explored and seen and done. So to see that, like she's the first one. And I think it was like 2008, oh, first person, 2008, like how it's pretty rare. Right, so for me, it was like, not necessarily being the first one, but doing something that you look at, and like you said, most people be like, why? What the hell is wrong with you? I like that because most people say, well, you can't do that. That's insane. You're going to die. And I like when people tell me I can't do it because it means I'm going to go and I'm going to do it. So for me, it was like that was the draw. And I think Catalina is an established swim, and obviously 500 people have done it, you know, that are recorded, have been recorded to do it. And I'm sure there's been others who just are stupid and do it like for fun. And but to me, that's like a challenge where, to a normal person, it's like, that's insane, you know, and where only 500 people have done it in like the history of the world. I think that's a small population or a small,
pretty cool,
you know?
Yeah.
So for me, it's like the prestige of that. Like people are like, well, do you win an award? I'm like, you get a piece of paper that says you did it, but like, that's not why you do it. You do it for the feeling I felt like when I finished, where it's like, I set out to do this 9 months ago. I put the time in, I put together this whole like,
quote unquote, let me ask you this, Craig. Do you feel like you're a changed person from doing it?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from it about like coaching and how to work with different people just because of things I've learned about myself. I used to think, well, this is the way you have to do it. But then I went through certain things I'd never went through in the past, like with just mental like toughness type issues and motivation and how to keep going. And then additionally, like that ego trap where it's like, if I don't finish, I'm going to lose all my athletes because they don't want to be coached by someone who can't do something like this.
Right.
So I think
things aren't that nuanced, right? They can't be like, he had a great effort, but due to circumstances, he didn't finish. Like that doesn't work for people.
Right.
It's like you've got to finish.
You either did it or you didn't do it. And you know, in my head, that's kind of, I knew there were possibilities where I might not finish, but I was going to do it. I said going in, I'm like, I'm going to leave two ways. I'm going to leave on my own, walking out of the other side, or I'm getting pulled out unconscious. And nice. Those are the only two ways I'm leaving. That's the only two ways I'm leaving the water. And I think if you don't have that mindset, then maybe it's not for you. But
that kind of commitment is so good because you don't have to be reconsidering your decision for the you know, every quarter mile while you're out there or whatever the hell it would be, right?
Yeah.
That would be torture to be like, should I get out? Should I stay in? Should I get out? You can't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I'm changed in the sense that I realize I can handle a lot more. Like I always thought I was like really tough, but there were things like in that swim, like staying up all night and dealing with the jet lag and being cold. And I've done all these separately in training, but never in one swim. And I don't think it just pertains to swimming. If you can kind of get through that, then it does.
Did you have a moment when you're after you finished, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the next day when you were just walking down the street to breakfast or something and you were like, God damn it, I just swam Catalina.
Yeah.
I feel pretty goddamn good about myself.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I felt like I had that an air of confidence.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, I achieved something big, you know?
I think anybody that and it's big in many senses, Greg, because, you know, you actually put years into being in a position to put a year, we'll say a year, 9 months or a year in order to really focus on this goal. I think anybody that can really knuckle down and say, I'm going to do something for a year that's hard. And it's not certain.
No, it is not.
And I'm willing to give it all that I have to see what happens. I think when you do that and come out the other side, you just have to be a different person. Or you more fully realize your own capabilities and possibilities and potential that you have.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to phrase it.
Yeah.
It was more, doesn't benefit anyone else. It just like when I finished, it just for me, it was like.
But you're in a position now to do more swimming stuff, but almost anything. Right. If you chose to do something else, Dan, he'd be like, you know, I swam Catalina. You know, if I put 9 hard months or a year of hard focused work into something, almost whatever it is, I'm probably going to get a goddamn good result from this. You know, that's a good feeling, right?
Yeah, it is. the confidence is nice. Everyone says, oh, you're a good swimmer, you're a good swimmer. But I know what Olympians are doing. I know who's doing amazing things in the open water community. Like this swim to, you know, most people is a big deal. It was a big deal for me because it was the biggest, the longest one for me. And it's a well-known established swim that when you do this English Channel or like the Manhattan Island Marathon swim, you're considered like, you're no joke. Like you're, right. you
you're
know,
serious
you,
professional.
They take you seriously. Yeah. So I think that was the big change for me was being like, okay, now I'm taken seriously because I've done one of like the big three swims.
So it seems to me, Dan, what is Craig's distinction? I wouldn't say, like you said, you're not real tall, so you don't have any obvious genetic talent, a predisposition that gives you an advantage over the next person as far as swimming goes, although you're more buoyant than I am, but I'm an outlier. But so what you really demonstrated is you have the ability to come up with a plan and put the work in, like to focus and marshal your resources and your efforts and put it towards something, which is actually a pretty good skill to have, pretty good capability to have, you know?
I think one thing that helped me was, you know, I coach swimming, but I'm not above being coached. And this was a new venture. Like my longest swim was in warm water and it was 15 miles. This is, you know, 20 miles in what's considered cold water. So I knew that was a big limitation and I didn't want to second guess myself. So I went, did the research and I found, you know, I talked to friends who have done similar swims and met people in the community and I was like, who should I work with? Like, I don't want to be second guessing myself every single time I do a swim. So like I found a guy's name's Dan Simonelli and he's like the Catalina guy. He volunteers for the Catalina Channel Swimming Federation. He kayaks for like multiple swims. He's done it three or four times himself. And he's like, if you're going to get coached by someone, might as well get coached by the guy who's been across and has coached many people across, you know, multiple times. So like, I think that was a big thing was not being afraid to kind of ask for help and be okay with limitations because that's what's going to make you, you're going to learn through that process. And now because of what my work with him, you know, it helped make me a better coach. Like now I feel like, oh, I've been through it. I know what it feels like. I can relate to other swimmers who want to do big things.
But what about swimmers that don't want to do, like, I'm not joking. Like, do you ever feel like I'm so dedicated? I went through so much. I sat for 50 minutes. Do you feel like it's harder when you're coaching people that aren't putting in as much effort or as much?
I don't care if you're not a good swimmer. What drives me nuts is when people come to me and then question, not like ask questions. There's a difference between asking questions and questioning you. Yeah. It's like, well, what makes you the expert? Like, dude, you came to me. Like, you know,
I know exactly what you're, you know, what you're talking about. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. I'm like, you found me. Like, I'm happy.
They come and they ask you specific advice. What do you think about this? And then you go, well, based on my experience, ABC. And they go, yeah, but
right.
And then they start arguing and I'm like, exactly. You just came to me and asked me.
That bothers me. But when someone comes to me and they just like, I want to do a sprint triathlon, which is a half mile and I can't swim. I think that like, because most of the people I work with, they're not kids. So when you're like 30 or 40 or 50 and you're learning to swim, there's a reason you haven't learned to swim yet. And it's like a very stressful, scary experience for most, like just putting your face in, which is second nature to me. So I enjoy working with like all levels as long as they're putting effort in. You know, they don't have to swim every single day.
What you're describing is somebody that is willing to put themselves out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
Which is admirable.
And be okay with it.
I feel the same way. Yeah.
And be okay with sucking. Like, it's totally fine. You're going to suck for a long time before you are good.
Right. That's a great thing about what you said is getting a coach, because I think it puts you in that place where you're becoming something else, where I have a coach. That means I'm going to transform myself in this process of this preparation and getting this input from the coaching. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to come out the other side, a better version of myself.
Right.
And I think if you don't have a coach, it's maybe harder to do that. So I think that was smart of you to get a coach like that.
It is. And some people are, you know, there's tons of different people. So for me, like I said, when I tried doing this the first time, not Catalina, but a big swim by myself, I overtrained like crazy. Mm. And I err on the side of, I want to be more prepared. Mm. So I think more is better. You end up getting hurt that way. But if I didn't have the coach, there's a good chance I wouldn't have made the swim just because I would have been injured like 2 months before, because the days I need a rest day, instead of, you know, I would just not take it. But I have a coach who says, no, you need to take that rest day, or you need to not swim this week. And having someone to tell you that you trust, so you listen to them, it makes or breaks your training essentially. Otherwise, like, I'm never going to take a rest day unless someone tells me to.
Right.
And I think there are times when you absolutely 100% need one.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you run down, you get sick. That's when you get injured.
Do you do anything with HRV monitoring, like that heart rate variability?
Not really.
No.
I mean, the thing is, like with a swim like this, it's there's no real difference in pace.
It's called morning readiness, where you do a 2.5 minute heart rate variability test.
Okay.
And it gives you feedback on how your system is doing, if it's tending to be overtrained or not.
Yeah.
And it gives you a little bit of feedback. I don't know how effective it is.
At this point, I know when I have certain things that I look for that tell me I'm overtrained.
Oh, all right. Like what?
I stop sleeping.
All right.
Like I get insomnia. Usually that's the first one. Like I'm tired all the time. I stop sleeping. I cannot get my heart rate up at all. Hmm. Like if I go and I just go outside and I try to sprint like a 400 meter, you know, just run, my heart rate won't go up. Like it won't go past like 100 beats per minute. So there's like, those are the two main ones. Once I start seeing that, that's usually my time to like.
Then you're in a state of overtraining.
Yeah. And at that, like overreaching is okay for a point, like to a point, but overreaching quickly becomes overtraining if you don't know when to pull back. And for me, as soon as I stop sleeping, that's it for me.
Now, what is your next thing?
Well, I'm back at jiu-jitsu now, which is
that's
I'm excited
awesome.
About. Yeah. So I took one during the swim. I was like, yeah, I'm going to keep going to jiu-jitsu like I talked to you about. I'm going to go to the drill classes on Mondays and Fridays. And I would get out of the pool after doing like a 4 or 5 hour swim. And I'm like, I'm too tired. I'm not getting to jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. And then I got to like 3 months away from the event. And I was like, yeah, I don't really want someone to roll on me like by accident, you know, or maybe I just do something stupid by accident, like in a drill and then hurt my shoulder and then all this is for nothing. So I'm back doing that. But I just signed up for the second of my Triple Crown swims. So the Triple Crown is Catalina, Manhattan Island Marathon Swim, and English Channel. English Channel, I'm not rich enough to do yet. So I got to save
that
some pennies.
That costs some dough.
Yeah.
How much does it cost?
The boat alone is like 5,000 pounds. So like 7,000, 7, you know, 7.5. And then you need the permit, which is like another 500 to 1,000. And then you have to get there and stay there for a week. And, you know, you're looking at
10, 15
grand. Yeah, easy. And with the English Channel, there's no guarantee you get in. You get a 3-day window. And if the weather's bad all 3 days, you don't swim. So you get half your money back for the boat. And that's it. So you got to be willing to. Yeah. To risk
now,
a lot of money.
Somebody told me you've helped people on the channel swim. Yep. Is that true?
Yeah. So I was a support swimmer for two people. Back in 2012, it was a guy I know from, you know, he's older. He was a boxer, bodybuilder, like not a swimming bone in his body, like no talent at all, but like was like a bulldog, you know, with mentally. And he hadn't said, I'm doing it. And he went 3 times. And it was the third time when I went with him. He was able to make it, whether having the support swimmer, I mean, I think that helped a lot, but you know, you learn every time you go what
so the first 2 times he got in the water, but couldn't finish.
One time he got in and they pulled him. The second time he didn't even get in the water. And then the third time.
It was a weather related
thing. Yeah. And the third time he got in and we finished. And yeah. So
that person who told me that you did that also told me that it's actually very dangerous, the channel, that people die and bad shit happens to them.
Yeah. English Channel's, I think it's, I don't know if it's the hardest swim, but it's considered one of the hardest swims, mainly because a fog could roll in. And the swimmer will separate from the boat and they never find each other again.
This sounds right up your alley, Dan.
Technology's not changing that though, you know?
They might change the rules, but right now the swimmer just wears like a glow stick or like a blinking bulb. So when it's a heavy fog coming across, like, yeah.
Yeah, you should have a GPS monitor on. That's
you would put it in the glow stick. Right?
It might be too expensive. I don't know. I mean, I guess if you're funding your own swim, I assume it's fine as long as it's small and doesn't impede.
That's got to be a great feeling. Well, it'll motivate you to finish then.
Yeah, I was thinking get separated from the boat. Yeah, well, the problem is, I don't know if you've heard this, but if you go in the desert and you get lost and you have no markings, if you
no
walk,
orientation.
You just walk in one direction, you think you're going straight. What happens is over time, you have one strong leg, one weak leg. What
they
ends
say
up happening?
They say it for the woods.
So you start making a circle. And
a
then
big
a small,
left-handed circle if you're right-legged.
Smaller and then smaller and then smaller. So swimming is the same thing. You got one side that's, you know, assuming you don't drown or freeze to death in this time, but you'll eventually just keep swimming in the same spot and hope the current pushes you, you know, in the right way.
So if I'm separated from my boat in the English Channel and I'm right-handed, I should think about going a little bit toward the right.
I guess. Or just start yelling for help. Or don't get separated. So, you know, there's stuff like that. There's a scary, I can't remember the name of what it's called, but it's basically you get pulmonary edema while swimming. It's like it's a swimming induced pulmonary edema because I think the mist from the water
So your lungs get filled
up. You start filling with water, you start developing a cough, and you actually drown, even though you're swimming at the surface. So, and that's a newer thing that people are starting to look for more. So like they say, if you start getting a cough when you're swimming and you don't normally have one, it's probably time to get out because you need to go to the hospital. So that's like another, that's not English Channel. That's just any long distance swimming.
And it sounds like jellyfish is a constant part of it, though.
Yeah.
Like, while we're talking about unpleasant things that happen.
Yeah, it is.
Because you just said you just got nailed by them.
Yeah. But again, it's the species. And it comes down to like how, you know, it sucks. And hopefully you're not allergic to them. But for the most part, you're not going to die. So if you can swim through it, then eventually it passes. And that's how all of it is. And that was like a big thing. I think it's very similar to jiu-jitsu is just because you're in one spot now. So if I'm swimming and I'm not feeling good now, doesn't mean in 5 minutes I'm not going to be feeling better. So if you're feeling bad, you swim through it. I feel like I, you know, in jiu-jitsu, like I'm in a bad place sometimes. I'm not going to tap. I'm just going to ride it out because they might make a mistake or I might find an opening to get out. And 30 seconds later, I'm not in that same spot anymore. So a lot of it is patience and, you know, riding it out and just seeing just because you're in a bad place mentally or physically, you know, at hour two doesn't mean you're going to be there at hour three. So just try to keep doing what you're trained to do just and keep eventually going.
Forward momentum. Dan.
Exactly.
Got it.
That's pretty much a life lesson, right? Just keep going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually get somewhere.
What was the other tricks you pulled when you're in the water and you're at that point where you're like, man, this sucks. I don't know if I can do this. I think you told me you shortened your breaks a little bit.
Yeah. So one
the
was,
interval.
Yeah. So one of the things I did was like, just think about 3 hours in, I had two friends flew out. One lived in California. The other flew up from the East Coast just to be a support swimmer. It was like 2 hours in. He hadn't even got a chance to get in yet. I'm like, I can't quit now. Like he's got to at least get in for an hour. Like I'll feel terrible. But then like, as the swim went on, I started having some real bad pain in my left shoulder to the point that I couldn't really pull water anymore. It's just moving the arm, but not really doing much with it. So at that point I was like 2 hours away. And I was like, mentally, I can make it. My feeds were 30 minutes. I'm like, I can make it 20 minutes. So I said, I told my crew, I'm like, I want to shorten the feeds every 20 minutes. Cause then mentally I could do like a mental reset every 20 minutes. Then I got to the last hour and I was like really struggling and I knew I only had about an hour left if I kept pushing. And I was like, I want to shorten them. Let's go 15 minutes. So it was really easy, you know, just similar to like, you know, just keep moving forward and you might be in a better spot.
I think what some people don't understand is that, you know, they'd say, you know, Craig did this swim. Oh my God, he's the mentally toughest person I know in my life or whatever, everything he can do. But even mentally tough people have those moments where they're doubting it and they want to quit. And I think the difference between them and the people that quit is they find these little gimmicks to just like keep it going a little bit more.
Right.
Keep it going a little bit more.
Yeah. So for me, it was faster feeds, but more often was helping me just, you know, because I was running on fumes at that point. Like, you know, you've been swimming for 10 hours at that point. You don't, anything you're taking in, like you're eating, is going right into the bloodstream. So there's nothing stored at that point. So you're getting a quick burst of energy and hydration, but more of that reset. Here are the people on the boat like cheer, like, yeah, you're doing great. You can see land at this point. You know you're getting close and making progress. So I think at that point it was, for me, shortening up was good. For some people, shortening up is bad because some people who stop swimming, everything starts getting tighter and tighter and tighter and they can't swim anymore.
Oh, I see.
But for me, I'm like, I'm not going to get tighter and my left arm can't move anyway. So even if it does, it doesn't change anything. But the shortening and seeing the crew and seeing the people and seeing land was that helped me get through it for the most part. And then just remembering, you know, why I was doing it, the feeling I was chasing. All those things really, really helped.
Did you have the feeling when you got on shore?
Yeah. I was like elated. It was the best I've ever felt like in my life. Any cool thing? Because I think in my head, it was like,
there was a chance. When are you officially on shore? When you're like,
your feet are out of the water.
So out of the water.
Your feet are level with the water line. So you have to walk up. So your feet are past water line.
Yeah.
So you have to walk out of the beach and then keep walking up the beach until like they blow the horns.
Then they blow a horn.
But I remember they had I think we did you watch? There was that special with that woman who swam from Cuba.
Diana Nyad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She got on the beach and it was like, don't touch her, right? Because if you're wading out, someone touches you, it's off, right?
Yeah.
Like,
somebody could come swooping in and blow the whole deal.
Right. Yeah. So. Yes, and you know,
sort of.
No, that is true. Yeah. Like you can't have assistance at any time, but So you have observers on the boat making sure you follow every single rule that's a rule, but they're also people. And if you just did this whole thing by the book, if they're not helping you up, or helping you
somebody
walk.
Somebody touched you. Yeah, they're not going to be obnoxious.
It's like a maniac ran up and... Right, yeah. and
they're not going to do anything.
Now, I ran the Boston Marathon a couple of times way back when. Mm-hmm. I had an experience where when you start to know you're going to finish, mm-hmm. you get... I got a surge of adrenaline. Yeah. Did you feel that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think I... Because when you're, when you're in water, things look closer than they really are. So I got it at 2 hours out. And then I made the mistake of asking him, like, how much longer? He's about 2 hours. And I was like instantly crushed. I was like in my head, I was like, okay, I can handle 2 hours. I was more nervous about when I tried not to ask ever how far. Because if in your head you're thinking...
Are we there yet?
Yeah, if in your head you think you have 2 hours left, but you have four or six,
that's
a devastating blow. Yeah. You're just like, you can't come back from that. So I didn't ask ever. I didn't ask how far I was.
I think I might use the strategy of like fooling myself. Like I probably have 12 more hours. I probably have 8 hours left.
Unfortunately, like everything in my plan was so well timed. I knew how much time had passed. I knew when I was getting feeds. I knew when when people were jumping in and jumping out, I knew exactly how long it had been. And I wish
the only thing you couldn't precisely know is the distance you covered, right? Okay.
So in my head, like next time, if for whatever swim I do, I'm going to follow the same plan, but I'm going to tell the crew, do it randomly to start. So I don't know.
Do what randomly?
Like, don't do it on the hour. Don't do it on the half hour. Do it within.
So you can't count. Like
that way I can't count if it's been, all right, I fed, that's a 30 minutes, then an hour. I'll be like, all right, feed me at 30 the first time, then pick 27 to 35 minutes the next time. So that way it's all, because then I don't know for a fact. Yeah. Like if I'm feeling bad and I know, oh crap, it's been 6 hours, I have at least four. Now I don't know because it's like, all right, well.
Interesting.
I have no idea. So that for me, that would be a trick that I know would help.
That would help you.
In future swims. Like I just don't want to know until I'm solidly on shore.
Very cool.
But yeah.
Just climbing the mountains or just taking my kids, it would be the same thing. But mountains have this way of like, oh, that's it. That's right the there. Top there. There's nothing above it, but it's like doing this. And so with my kids, I'd always do the exact wrong thing. I'd be like, it's right there. Like, just make it to there. And then you get to that. And then you're like, there's more. And then you go, maybe a little, just a little more. And then you get to the top of that. The kids would be like, Dad, I hate this.
Yeah,
you know, like,
it sucks. Yeah, it's similar. Because then like, so it happened at 2 hours. And then I think they threw everyone in the last hour because we hadn't filled, because I swam at a fast enough pace that no one swam the max amount. Everyone got to finish with me. So it was like, I was in the coach, my dad, and then my two support swimmers. We were all swimming the last like half hour together. And normally like they throw you in like the last quarter mile. So I'm like, yeah, I'm like almost there. And I'm swimming. They have to do another feed. And I'm like, what? Like, cause every 15, I'm like, it's like, what the hell? Like, I thought we were like done. Like, I'm like getting all emotional, but I'm not, I feel like I'm not making any progress to land. And then finally when I made it and I was like, oh, thank you. Know, I was just so happy. Like all the pain goes away. And
yeah. I bet.
It's a cool feeling.
So cool. Dan, do you have any other questions?
No.
Is this something you're going to get into, you think?
No.
You sure?
Well, you never know.
You already did the most dangerous thing you could do, so it's all downhill. Swimming with seals.
Oh, that's right.
Swimming
with sharks.
Yeah. Mine. I already did something so much more dangerous than this.
That's personally, this long-distance ocean swimming, this is probably the hardest thing I could do. So this is something I'm going
to... It's appealing to you?
It's appealing to me because I think for me personally, it'd be one of the most difficult challenges I could undertake. So it's, I still got a lot of jiu-jitsu to do, but maybe that's going to come after that. We'll see.
I think they supplement each other quite well, like the swimming and jiu-jitsu training, like the cardio and the you're not pounding, like going running, you're just pounding on all your joints, but you're going swimming, you're not really using the same and you're flushing out. You're actually getting to flush out your arms, which you don't normally get to do. So
but all of these things, you keep seeing the same parallels that come up. Like when you were saying, even so for climbing, sometimes, it seems so exhausting and you're just sort of like, I can get to there. Let me just get to there.
Right.
That's a common thing in climbing. You're like, you can't have your head that I'm going to do this whole thing. I've got to climb for 8 more hours.
Baby steps.
It's just, I can get to that spot there. Yep. That's what you were saying, swim, right? Like, let me just get.
Next half hour.
Yeah, next
half. Let me to the next half hour. That's it. Just
sometimes I'm sitting here and I look at you and I say, I just got to get through this podcast.
Five more minutes.
Almost done.
Well, Craig, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having
me. This is awesome, man.
Yeah, it was fun.
I knew a lot of the story, but I knew Dan didn't know it. It was such cool stuff. And we'll have to have you in here after Manhattan.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I get in. I applied. So there's a selection process. So there's 4 dates. Only 60 swimmers can do it total. So 4 dates, 15 people each. But they look at your swimming history and where you're coming from and a bunch of other factors. So I applied a few days ago because it just opened up. And hopefully I'll know in the next month if I get in or not. So we'll see.
Now, if somebody wanted to use your services as a coach, mm-hmm. and why don't you tell us about what you're doing and as far as all that is concerned, how could somebody reach you?
Yeah, so my website's liquidtry.com. We do
Liquid
Try.
Try.
Yep.
T-R-Y?
T-R-I, like a triathlon.
Liquid Try.
Liquidtry.com. Uh-huh. So basically, you're learning to swim or you're doing your first triathlon or you're doing your 100th triathlon where you can help, you know, improve your stroke, teach you how to swim, get you comfortable in the water, you know, kind of whatever you need. We have lots of connections in the triathlon community. So if you're looking to get in triathlon but don't really know where to start, you can always reach out. And
I'll attest, Craig did some coaching for me, and he's a very good coach, very patient. I'm used to screaming coaches. He didn't scream at me once.
This was even, you just sank right to the bottom.
Right.
But yeah. Well, he was underwater a lot, so I was yelling, but he couldn't hear me.
But you're saying, and it's any level swimmer, yeah, any level, goal too. Yeah. Like it doesn't have to be for a triathlon,
no,
right?
It's, I have a lot of people just doing fitness. To... It's for 18 plus, so all adults. We don't really work with kids, just because that's the niche. I like working with adults. They tend to, when they want to do something, they put the effort in, mm-hmm. and I think that's it's fun for me to work with those people and help them, you know, whether it's go a faster time or just get to the other end.
Awesome, it is. So, yeah. Reach out to Craig at liquidtry.com if you want to improve your swimming. If you have any more questions about his swimming and all the things he's doing, please do that. We'll be back next week, Dan. So for you folks listening, please rate and review our podcast. Please share it on Facebook and social media. Tell your friends about it. We'll look forward to talking to you folks next week.